This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Let's go!
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. This is Brian here with Luke and David, and today we're going to be covering the Adult Swim flagship show, Rick and Morty. Today we have the season five premiere episode entitled Mort, Dinner, Rick, Andre. You gotta love the episode titles of this show. And season premiere, Rick and Morty notoriously has some pretty sporadic episode drops, big gaps between seasons. I, for one, am very happy to have season five upon us, and I thought it was a pretty strong start to the season. And Morty takes center stage. This was a very Morty-centric episode, and I'm going to turn it over to Luke because I'm dying to hear what you thought.
I love this episode. As always, Rick and Morty is one of the most controversial TV shows out there. It grew such a big fan base in such a short amount of time that there's so many Reddit gripes and people on Twitter talking shit and the people on Instagram loving it. You know, it's such a controversial show, and the fan base itself is super controversial, but I was surprised at the amount of positivity I was seeing around the internet on this premiere, and I just thought it was fantastic. It's a good start. We got a tiny bit of overarching plot, a little bit of character development for some of the side characters. And I think Mr. Nimbus, who got introduced this episode, is going to be a mainstay for the series every once in a while. Not like a main character, but, you know, he should be popping in and out. I thought it was a great start to season five.
I'm so happy we're covering this show. We were just like looking for time to kill, basically, on the podcast. We're like, oh, what shows can we cover right now? Rick and Morty dropped, and we were like, let's do it. And whatever episode we want to cover, I'm going to be there for it. Rick and Morty, for me, is probably my second favorite animated show right now, right behind American Dad. I'm just like a sucker for American Dad, but it's five seasons versus 18 seasons. So, I mean, Rick and Morty has that potential. So glad to be covering it on the podcast. And like Luke said, I think we did get a great, I'm not going to say phenomenal episode, but I'll definitely say a great episode with the premiere here.
So I do want to give a little bit more high level of like why we got into this, because Dave, you mentioned it right there. This was a last spur of the moment kind of thing where we decided to cover the show. I think every single person that's on Bingetown TV watches this show and loves it. So it kind of just makes sense. It's sci-fi. It's weird. There's so much to dive into. If you put in the time, it just was right up Bingetown alley, and we just thought it made sense. So we're going to do our best. We're not going to treat this like the other Bingetown episodes where we super deep dive into everything. We are going to touch on a lot of our favorite quotes, some of the plots that we think are going to matter in the long term and character development, stuff like that. But I don't think we're going to be as nitty gritty as a lot of our other podcast episodes are. So with that being said, I do want to just round table real quick between the three of us and explain the kind of fans we are, because I mentioned it earlier. There's so many different kinds of fans of Rick and Morty. There's the diehards. There's the people that just watch it for the comedy. There's those cringy people in the fan base. It's got all kinds. It's such a wide range show. It hits adults. It hits kids. It's played on Adult Swim, so it has a huge audience. But I just want to say I'm mostly taking the style of an audience member as someone who overly loves the plot stuff. And I know a lot of people that might be listening to this right now aren't really into the show for that. I do like really pointing out when they make decisions that affect the long term and upcoming season. So I'll always be pointing that out. So if you hate me, apologies, but I love the big picture stuff.
I do like Rick and Morty plot story. I think it's got infinite potential, obviously, with the show. I just don't really mind too much of when we get a little like off topic, just like random spur of the moment episodes, just because they're so random. Like this episode is a prime example of how weird things can get out just beyond of what the Galactic Federation is up to and all that stuff. So I'm always excited to get an episode like this.
I'm a huge fan of the show. I'm very aware when the episodes drop, I get excited for them. I wouldn't say I'm a diehard. I don't critique every little thing. I take the show at face value. I think, you know, the showrunners of it kind of are very aware that people are craving more plot and structure to the show. And they're like, we're going to do whatever the fuck we want. And I feel like when they're going off on these wild Rick and Morty tangents that have nothing to do with any overarching plot, that's when the show can really be at its best. You know, I like it for what it is. That said, if they can tie it together, have like an overarching plot and kind of drive it and bring it home and just have more of a compact story to it, you know, that would just add levels to it. But for the first four seasons of its run, there was really none of that. And, you know, I didn't really critique it because that's Rick and Morty. But I think we're going to start getting a lot more of it. And I think this episode right off the bat kind of showed me, at least, that they're going to start giving us some more important plot lines, overarching themes, starting with Mr. Nimbus, who came out of nowhere as Rick's nemesis. He only has one nemesis. And clearly they have this kind of relationship that I would put akin to a bird person sort of relationship. Obviously, Rick and bird person were never enemies at any point until he became Phoenix person or whatever. You know, he also said when we used to be fighting together back in the day, like that's when I was most fulfilled. If I think this Mr. Nimbus, like you said, Luke, is going to be a recurring character. And I, for one, loved him. I thought he was hilarious.
It was recent news in the Rick and Morty world as recently as I think in the middle of last season, the writers of Rick and Morty found out that they got signed to a 10 season extension. Because Rick and Morty is such a complicated show to make, it's so deep, the dialogue always means more than one thing. These writers take their time with this show. The safety net of knowing they have 10 seasons worth of material left allows them to now start planting seeds even heavier than they did in the first four seasons that don't need to pay off for 6 years in our time, right? And I think that's what this episode did. We get a name drop of Rick's now deceased wife. I thought that was an incredibly interesting line when Mr. Nimbus says something along the lines of, I liked your other one better. Kyle was his name. And then Rick just shuts him down real quick. There's got to be a whole backstory to what that meant. So just stuff like that. They can put the seeds in now and know that they cannot even touch this for two seasons, three seasons down the line because they have this safety net by Adult Swim. But if you guys are ready, we could just start diving through some of the episode.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
So in the beginning of the episode, we have the cold opening of Rick and Morty on this crystal world. And the whole purpose of this montage is to set up two main things. Morty saving the day from a defeated Rick, which is kind of uncharacteristic of him. Morty himself gives into the inevitability of his death after he, even though he escaped the planet and the crystal monster, whatever it was, he had no way to drive the ship. So he gives a last minute call to his girl, Jessica. That sets that whole storyline into motion. And then also the important part of the beginning is just the fact that Morty survives this crash by landing it into the ocean and breaks the treaty between land and sea.
I think it's so funny that Morty calls Jessica on just like a Hail Mary shot. And of course, in Morty's position, as he's facing just the inevitable that he gets his one shot at Jessica. That's why he crashes in the ocean, because he's so desperate to get that moment with her tonight to hang out.
He's going to get laid one of these days, man.
One of these days, I hope so. He got a kiss.
I did not think this was going to be a Jessica episode just to start off the season, but you know, it worked out. The ending was crazy for her character development. We'll talk about that in a little bit.
I do appreciate when they give us any moments of weakness and vulnerability for Rick. And my gosh, when they both sit down in the hovercraft and Rick just says, I'm such a silly, dumb man. He just has this moment of clarity when he really thinks this is the end, as he's had before. But I just appreciate those things. And boy, like one of you guys said, Morty just stepping up to the plate. We got that a lot in season four, actually. Yep. But Morty is turning into a very capable, almost young Rick. You know, Rick is rubbing off on him in a very significant way. He can handle his own shit. And he's going to have to, because Rick fucks up all the time. Mm-hmm. So it's just nice to see. And Luke, you've been asking for character development for every season. I think Morty has shown a lot over last season, definitely. And it's continuing this season.
1000% agree. They kicked it up a notch just randomly. I think it might have been towards the end of season three or early season four, where Morty, he just understood a little bit more. I forget what episode it is last season, but when it's just him, Beth, and Summer, and Summer and Beth are fucking up, but Beth doesn't want to call Rick, and he's like, this is some Rick level shit. He just has a grasp on when things are beyond the scope of what not Rick can do, you know?
When they turn her giant and her skin inside out. Yeah.
And that's another thing that makes this show great. Luke was saying earlier is just like how all the little things can be referenced and called back. Like in this episode, we got a couple callbacks of previous episodes. Like you don't see that in animated shows, like with Family Guy, The Simpsons, like, okay, maybe in The Simpsons, but a lot of like Family Guy, American Dad, a lot of the episodes don't have ties to other episodes. Sure, we can get trilogy episodes and whatnot, but the one episode following the next isn't going to necessarily be related to each other. And that's kind of what Rick and Morty does the best, I think. But we do get some references of old seasons, which is always a treat.
I don't want to call it a slight, but I almost want to say that it's a moot comparison between a show like Family Guy / American Dad and Rick and Morty, because Rick and Morty has a lot more depth to it, a lot more. The dialogue is just like smarter. And there is an overarching plot for these characters. Nobody really knows what it is yet, but it's just a deeper show. So I think to compare the two would not be a slight to Rick and Morty, but it's almost unfair. They're just two completely different shows.
This next little chunk of scenes here is very important for setup for the rest of the episode, where we find out that Rick invited Mr. Nimbus over to the house to have dinner just so they can restart the treaty between land and sea. While that's going on, he's going to send Summer to go do a backup plan in case it doesn't go well. He's sending her to the Mariana Trench to go get the shell that gives Mr. Nimbus his powers. And at the same time, we get the start of Jerry and Beth's C plot of this episode, where they're just talking about how much they fuck all the time and they watch porn and stuff, and this is going to kickstart the Mr. Nimbus three-way thing. And then also we get a quick intro into Rick trying to age some of his wine using the Narnia pocket dimension, which has a time dilation thing going on, where when the door to that Narnia universe is not open, the Narnia universe is experiencing time at like times like 10,000, whatever it is.
That's obviously to ripen the grapes for the wine that he needs.
Yeah.
So it's just convenience
to know that when the door is open, the timelines are linked. So time doesn't pass as long as that door's open. But my favorite line in this part is when Summer gets the mission to go to the Mariana Trench. She's like, let's lick tits. And Beth and Jerry just having none of it. She's like, you're fucking lame anyway.
I also love that you called Beth and Jerry Barry, because that's totally going to be their name Barry. From now on.
Barry. Love it.
Keep going here, because we could just talk about anything as we're moving through the plot here. Mr. Nimbus makes his arrival. He shows up in his cool little shell mobile with his little starfish assistants. He basically gets called out by Jerry, saying, who is this guy? He's such a weirdo. He's pelvic thrusting around, dancing, being all smooth. I love Mr. Nimbus, by the way.
And love him.
Jerry calls him on his bluff right away, calling the police. And Rick tells him, no, dude, that's Mr. Nimbus. He controls the police. And he's like, what the fuck does that mean? And when they get there, all the police show up after finding out the family's white, of course. Mr. Nimbus just starts pelvic thrusting and giving out commands. He's like, fight, fuck, flee. And then Jessica shows up. But a couple things happen here. Nimbus interacts with Barry for the first time in the episode. And then Morty's going to bring Jessica back into the room to watch Interdimensional Cable, which gives us a cool little clip of Nintendo 69. I thought that was absolutely hilarious. And then she wants wine. And that's kind of where we're at here.
They do make it a point that Barry, the couple, are still seeing Dr. Wong. So Dr. Wong is very much their family therapist still, which is a great reference.
I would say I thought it was funny, the little starfish. Nimbus just, this is the scene where Nimbus gives Barry the nod and the starfish assistant just comes up. Ooh, I am jealous of you. It's totally optional, but I guarantee you a great option to have nonetheless. Has him sign the paperwork. She just dips. Mr. Nimbus is great. I really do like him. And there's no way they're not going to keep calling back to him, akin to like a Mr. Poopy Butthole sort of character.
And Nimbus, after he gives the nod to the starfish, when he walks by Beth and Jerry, he brushes Jerry's dick and then slaps Beth's ass as he's walking by and just winks at them and walks in, because he's just the smoothest guy.
And they totally take the bait, man. They totally take the bait right there.
So they get inside And what happens next? Rick and Mr. Nimbus are just around the table. The treaty's sprawled out. They're ready to sign it on the dotted line. Well, I guess they're eating first. He's eating those little cakes in a weird way. He's being a dick, like takes one swig of the wine, smashes it against the wall, and then makes Morty get him more. Also, Rick is watching on his phone a stream of Summer. He was in the Mariana Trench, fucking up some monsters and stuff. Yep. This is actually really good off-screen character development for Summer, I would say.
She's been doing it consistently for a little bit now.
I was just going to say, in the Mad Max episode, she was plenty badass there, too.
True, true, true.
But the first time Morty goes to get the wine, it establishes the society of, what do we want to call the Narnia people?
Dog people.
Dog people, yeah. Okay.
The dog alien people, whatever. So one of the main dog people alive at this time, and they're you just got to think, they're in the beginning of their civilization, pre-medieval times even, and the dad of the family decides to help carry the wine through the Narnia door back to Earth and help out Morty.
You ain't seriously going to call him the dad of the family and not call him Hoovie.
Hoovie. He doesn't last much longer.
True.
So Hoovie helps out, but the problem is when he goes back to Earth, Morty shuts the door temporarily. And even though it's only shut for a second, when the dad goes back through to Narnia, it has been decades and decades. His wife is a skeleton and dead. And he was just telling Morty how happy he was finding the love of his life. And then the son, who must have lived the most fucked up life without the father in the picture, just comes out and sees the dad and stabs him right in the chest to have, quote unquote, avenge the mother. But as the dad is dying, he says to the kid,
"It was the boy from the magic door."
And this kickstarts the biggest butterfly effect that shapes the entire society of this world for centuries and centuries and centuries, which in my opinion is the best plot of this entire episode. Everything that subtly is happening as they develop and they center their whole entire culture around screwing Morty over next time he comes back. So after Morty gives the first round of wine to Nimbus and Rick, Nimbus crushes it in 2 seconds, says, "Go get more." And then that's when that child, the dark child prophecy kind of thing gets established.
All the while, Jessica is in the house, ready to watch a movie and also wants wine. So Morty's kind of juggling serving Rick and also trying to have a date with Jessica.
He has that interaction with Jessica. He goes back through the door because Jessica wants wine and he has to get more for Nimbus. Mm-hmm. So he goes back through the door and he goes, and it's the gravestone of the mother of the guy now.
The son is now an adult and starts beating the shit out of Morty. And Morty just throws sand in face and dips. He has 3 kids, too, which are seen in the next one when he's like an old dude.
And Morty at this point thinks that's Hoovie, but it's not Hoovie. He's just like, why are you kicking my ass all of a sudden, you know?
After the son of Hoovie dies and passes on this will to kill Morty to his kids, that's when we get a huge time jump in this civilization.
Yeah.
And that's when they hit Game of Thrones level, right? Where they have the entire castle built around. They have all these crossbows in the area where they think the door is going to reappear. And I thought all of this was so freaking epic. So the next time Morty does have to go back in and get the wine, he gets in there, realizes he's about to die, runs right back through the hole. And everybody in that world is so happy. They're cheering. They think they succeed.
They think they got him. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then Morty was already in a pissed off mood because he couldn't get the wine for Jessica. He says, "Okay, Narnia, let's fucking go." And he just gears the hell up in Rick's garage laboratory, goes back in and just fucks everybody up. He starts destroying the castle, right? And I think this time when he leaves is when we have that epic montage of the sorcerer grabbing the son of the current king who doesn't believe in the prophecy of the dark child. And we get that quick montage of him growing up to be, you know, it's like the typical fantasy grabbing the exiled prince son to kill, you know, to dethrone the king. And I just thought, I don't have to get into the specifics of all that, but I just thought how their tech evolved and just like the cool level of detail they put into that training montage that was on screen for 5 seconds, showing that dude getting trained by the sorcerer, was just so incredible.
A lot to talk about right now, but I do want to say whenever Morty gets a chance to flex some of Rick's inventions, he's also at the same time showing off his knowledge, because the fact that he also knows how each of these individual devices works and is like no fear to kill anybody at all, exactly what B-Thomas was saying in the very beginning of this episode, is like how much Rick is just rubbing off on Morty right now. This is just such a Rick thing to do, to just get pissed off and then just say, fuck it, I'm just going to do what I want to do and kill all these people. The other thing I want to say too, real quick, B-Toms, is so Hoovie, the original guy, has his son, and his son grows up and Morty goes back and he takes off his shirt and Morty's like, fuck, not another jacked old guy, referencing the story lord from the train conductor episode.
Yes.
When it's the tickets please guy. Yes. He rips off, he's like some old dude. They think they're going to have their way with him and he rips off his shirt and he's all muscular. Mm-hmm. So that was the reference he was talking about when he said, not another old ripped guy.
Thank you for that. I didn't know what the reference was to.
Yeah, I had to look it up. I will shout out the decider.com for hooking it up because I had to find it. I had to look it up right away.
So the climax of that whole sorcerer and sorcerer apprentice scene, and they dethrone the king who believed about Morty, who believed in the idea of the dark child Morty. When that is coming to a climax, Morty actually re-shows up again. And this is where the sorcerer just drops everything. He's like, fuck, I was wrong. He's real. And then Morty kills everyone again. But this time when he leaves with the wine, he leaves the robot.
It's like a gauntlet or something. Yeah.
Terminator style, right? It jump starts their tech evolution. So this time when he goes back to Earth, the next time we go back to Narnia, a lot changes. They jump their technology like thousands of years. Now back on Earth for a little bit here. This is, Dave, where we get the line about Mr. Nimbus being annoyed at Morty because Morty's all pissed because he's dealing with the Narnia stuff. He says, I like your other one more. What was his name? Kyle? And then Rick just shuts it down. But give me some thoughts. What is that possibly going to be?
Dude, I have no idea because how old is Rick, to be honest now? This just makes me question how old Rick is. It just opens the table. And I like what you said, Luke, earlier, how they can just plant these seeds and just revisit them seasons later. Like, this is just already something that I love when just shows in general do, when they just do something subtle like this and then make it a callback in the future. So I have no idea. I'm excited to see if they do anything. They will do something more with this, obviously. Like, it's, I think they have to.
B-Toms, is Kyle going to be important? Put it on the board.
Put it on the board.
And Rick shut Morty down. Morty was like, Kyle, who the fuck is Kyle? Rick's just like, don't worry about it. Get out of here. So Morty heard it. I would hope that Morty confronts him just like, yeah, what was Mr. Nimbus talking about with Kyle? Like, what's that all about? But I don't know. There's only one Morty. Every Rick has a Morty. So I don't know where this Kyle guy comes in.
That's true.
And Dave, to respond to you, I feel like we have a benchmark for how old Rick is because he had Beth before he invented the portal gun.
Okay, right.
Based on that flashback, which I'm now recalling was a fabricated flashback. So that might not even have been true.
Yeah, I still take it as an audience member that even though that was not real reality, I still think that at the core, that was the memory that he had at its core. So I still take that episode as like that actually happened.
Yeah. So will we see Kyle? That's the other thing. Rick and Morty plants these seeds and sometimes they just choose not to cash in on him. But this seems like too awesome not to cash in, especially Luke. We got 10 more seasons, so they're going to cash in eventually. We're going to be Kyle. Oh, yeah.
We got the seeds of Diane, Rick's dead wife, like for seasons now, and they still haven't even given us the full picture of what her deal is. Like, we've only seen a couple episodes referencing her, this being probably the couple episode, like the second episode we've ever seen or heard of her. So I think they will definitely come back to Diane at some point.
Definitely. That has to be a thing.
It's crazy to think that it's been 5 seasons because it just feels like yesterday that I was watching season 1, like at my house.
Back on Earth here, and we have that Kyle line by Mr. Nimbus. And we think that Morty's done with getting more wine here. We're good. Like, he has the wine for Jessica. He goes back to the Jerry's den, gives her the wine. They start talking. They have a meta conversation about their relationship, the on and off that's been going on through the first 5 seasons. And they actually get a good kiss in here, which is pretty rare for a poor Morty. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to, you know, give him a little fist pump for that. As this happens, Jessica wants to open the wine, of course, and he needs a bottle opener. So when Morty goes back into the kitchen, we flash back to Narnia. It's a solo Narnia cutaway. And we get a new, quote-unquote, main character of their world. And I think his name is Adam, right? He's being trained by his mother to be the one that's going to take on the role of killing Morty when he comes back. He's the chosen one in their world. And the mother has like all these holograms that she's sending at him that are just evil versions of Morty, which I thought were hilarious. But you get a time skip through Narnia of Adam's life where he's now a full-fledged warrior adult ready to go kill Morty. And they, because of the tech jump from the hand that Morty left in the last visit, they have the ability to send him to the Earth dimension, which is what they do. They put this cool suit on him. They fill him up with the gases that he needs to breathe and throw him into Earth. And what he does is he pops out of the Narnia door into the kitchen and immediately starts just fucking shit up, basically. And when he shoots like a laser through the wall, it misses. It almost hits Nimbus. That triggers something in Nimbus, thinking that he's that Rick's trying to assassinate him. They get into a whole scuffle here. And then Jessica saves the day. She takes the can opener, the wine bottle opener, and stabs it through the tube that's supporting Adam. And it just first it sends him into the future, like this weird outside of time scene.
Cosmic Owl. Yes, is what it looked like, Dave.
That's what it looked like.
The Cosmic Owl from Adventure Time.
Yeah.
That's dude, exactly what it looked like. Or even the owl from Avatar, the library.
Oh, true.
The after the owl gives the warning, it shoves Adam back through Earth's time. And then when he's getting ripped back to Narnia, it brings Jessica with him. And Morty starts freaking out, of course, because he knows what's going on with the time dilation being so wildly different. What the hell's going on with Jessica? And then the last thing we see before I'll stop talking right now, he opens the door, Morty, that is, to Narnia, and he's going to jump in there to save her.
He gets caught here. It's all white. It's like a stereotypical movie trope. Like you go in, see like an older version of yourself sitting beneath a grape tree, and he's talking in very cryptic. Ah, yes, Jessica was her name way back when. I forgot. It's been so long. Here, take these grapes. You'll need them. And Morty kind of thinks he's safe. He's taking in his surroundings and he presses the button and he gears down. Like all of his armor and weapons just fall off. Soon as he does that, Tentacle comes in, the white walls drop, and it's an audience of cyborgs viewing this stage, and they're like, holy shit, we got him. I can't believe he fell for the dream trope. Oh my gosh, what an idiot. And then we fast forward. Morty is in, I don't know, suspended incredible style in electric whatever, and he sees Jessica frozen in like this crystal, just taken in his surroundings. And there's this scientist cyborg who comes up. Ah, thank goodness you're awake, you know. And he goes on to this discussion. We saw this girl, Jessica, and she's frozen in time. And we thought she would be the answer, yada, yada, yada. Morty just gets out of his trap or whatever, kicks this dude right in the nuts. And it's like, give me Jessica, like get her down from there. Come on. And he's like, oh, why did I clone myself genitals? Presses the button. Jessica comes down. You know, she's a little frazzled, but they got to get out of there. Don't have much time to comprehend what's going on. They're running through and they're running through this civilization who has these giant robot dogs, robot birds or whatever. They barely get through the portal, but are trapped by a tentacle. And at this point, Morty knows he's in over his head and just starts screaming for Rick because he is in the Smith house. And if he goes back through that door without Rick, he is a goner.
Yes.
Rick, for his part, is having a conversation with Mr. Nimbus. But go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say to catch up the Rick side, because there is stuff that's going on with them before Morty opens that door. And it's important to note that the conversation's really only 30 seconds, because if it was anything longer, a lot more time would have passed for Morty. Right. So Mr. Nimbus and Rick are going at it because Mr. Nimbus thinks he just tried to assassinate him with the Adam attempt, which obviously wasn't true. So Rick demeans the shit out of Nimbus, saying, you're useless. I don't need you anymore. This is why we don't fight, because you're a piece of shit. And then Nimbus turns it on him and just starts psychoanalyzing him, calling him all these names and, you know, pointing out all of his flaws. That's when he drops the Diane line. And then at that time, before he can get into it, is when Morty starts screaming, help Rick, help Rick.
How are we going to skip over the best quote of the episode? When they're going back and forth and Nimbus is like, oh, you don't want war with Atlantis. And Rick responds, I've already been to war with Atlantis when I D-Day'd that mermaid puss. It was so great. I thought he was dying at that line.
I do want to have a conversation real quick while we're here. I forget the name of the episode. It's like the Rick Citadel, whatever episode, where it's all about evil Morty. Right. And his rise in the political spectrum, because they step away from our Rick and Morty because they go on their adventure to Atlantis. I think it's actually called something about Atlantis, because it, even though the episode has nothing to do with what do you know what I'm talking about, Dave? It's when you get the whole view of the society of all the Ricks and the Mortys. There's the fat Morty cop who has.
Is that not the Rick Shank Redemption episode?
I forget the name of it, but you know, that whole episode is in the background of what's happening is our Rick and Morty are going to Atlantis and they both
are
mermaids, right? So
definitely the reference. I mean, he's talking about smashing mermaid puss. Yeah. It's definitely the exact reference.
The Ricklantis mix-up is what the episode is called. And yes, absolutely. At the very end, they come back through the portal and are just man, did you have a good time? Yeah, man, I smashed that mermaid puss. And they just high five.
Oh my God. That's what
I remember. We universally loved that line the first time they dropped it. Yeah. And I'm so glad they brought it back.
Back to Atlantis next week.
That's, ladies and gentlemen, why you catch this podcast.
Atlantis is a thing. It's been a thing already before this Mr. Nimbus episode, even though he is the king of Atlantis. So that's all great. Love all that. After Morty and Jessica are begging for help, Rick runs in thinking he's just going to own the place. And when they get in there, he is completely overwhelmed by the advanced technology that the robot bird, tech bird had.
Dude, his face, it's that Morty look when he's like, Morty's completely dumbfounded and his lips kind of like droop. He had the same fucking look on his face when the bird took his fucking shit. It was so great.
He shoots the beam at the bird. Cocky is all get off. He's just like, all right, let me handle the situation. The bird absorbs it and shoots it right back at him, strips him of everything. He's just standing there naked. And what he says is, oh, whoa, that's pretty cool. And then they start running back. It's just like, oh, shit.
Rick hasn't seen everything.
Right after he's mocking them for, oh, why do they always do the cyberpunk birds? It's so like done to death or whatever.
And that's a reference to Phoenix Person.
Yeah, direct reference.
Yeah.
For sure.
While Rick's trying to save Morty and Jessica, this whole thing's happening again. The door is remaining open, so time's not passing crazy for them. And you think they're screwed. The robot civilization now puts all the walls up around them, and they're going to capture him. And then that is when the homie, Mr. Nimbus, comes out of nowhere from the sky with the freaking pelvic thrust that summons all the whales to fall from the sky as the ocean crashes over and gets rid of all the obstacles in their way. And he just grabs and he's like, oh, Mr. Nimbus. And like they swim back towards the door back to Earth. Anything else you guys want to talk about from Narnia?
All I wanted to say is if you do not like Mr. Nimbus, you can get the fuck out of our podcast, man. We are a pro Nimbus podcast.
Definitely.
Thoughts on Narnia? No, I just, Luke, like you said, that was the plot of the episode that shined, just their advancement from a dirt civilization to this technological powerhouse. I thought that was so fun. That's something Rick and Morty always does very well, is having these, what could be an entire story in and of itself, into like a 6-minute subplot. So I love the Narnia, love Hoovy, RIP.
Literally, it all started from Hoovy just not being nice. Just being a good person, and Morty became this villain. So it's just, I love Narnia. Like B-Tom said, I think you put it perfectly. It's just, they do these things so well where they could literally make an entire series probably on Hoovy's fucking lifestyle and what that world was, but they got to cram it into this 22-minute episode, which is bullshit.
This was very similar. I don't know if they use the word pocket dimension this episode. I kind of forget. But if they do, this is the same situation that Rick was putting Beth as a child, right? The Froopy Land. It's like that pocket door that opens up.
Even the engine to his fucking spaceship is a pocket dimension. So they might have said pocket dimension. I don't know.
They do it super early. But either regardless, way, I love when they do this stuff. It's the definition of sci-fi. You're allowed to explore any bounds that you want. And they just always pick a fun lane and just lean the hell into it. And they did that better than I've seen in a while. If this wasn't considered the A-plot of the episode, if you're going to say Nimbus and Rick were the A-plot, this was one of the best B-plots I've seen in a while. After Nimbus saves the day and they're back in the garage, a couple things that are hilarious happen here. We have the quick Morty and Jessica conversation, which we can dive into in a second, where she basically says that they're no longer going to be a couple, even though they went through all these swings in this episode where you thought that was the trajectory they were heading towards. But she was conscious that entire time that she was in the frozen stasis. And because of that, that would drive any person insane. So she has a completely different mindset now. We could bring up quotes on that in a second.
How about we bring a reference in real quick? Luke, Dr. Stone, right? Dr. Stone.
Oh, hell yeah.
It's an anime. Basically, main character, well, the whole world gets frozen in stone, but the main character, like, you're totally awake the entire time. And the main character literally counts every second for like 3,000
years.
Yeah. So he knows exactly what day it is 3,000 years into the future.
That's
so.
Exactly what that situation was. She was staring at civilization, watching it evolve over centuries. You got to assume because you saw
it was probably 1,000 years at least.
Oh my God. It was
crazy.
Terrible.
Thank God they propped her up against a window. Could you imagine if she was facing a wall? Oh my God. That would be worse.
Okay, so as that's happening, Rick and Nimbus are making up in the background, actually, where Nimbus is saying, okay, we don't actually need to do this treaty anymore because there's no more war. I forgive you. We could be friends again. But then Summer kicks in the door with the shell from the Mariana Trench saying, I have the power. And Nimbus is like, fuck you, man. You piece of shit. You were going to betray me.
Rick immediately says, shit. He just knows right away that him and Nimbus are about to go back to fighting.
Because he's pissed at Summer. He said, I told you to destroy it. She's like, how the hell was I supposed to know? Because now if she did, everything would have been fine. But because she didn't, Nimbus beat the shit out of Rick, drags him into the front yard. And of course, you know, he controls the police. He's Mr. Nimbus. He just puts Rick in jail. Such a great way to end the episode. And the only last thing that happens is the post-credit scene where Jerry and Beth decide to take Mr. Nimbus up on the contract and they go to his apartment and they bang.
So I kind of want to talk about this whole Jerry and Beth situation because we haven't really dived into it. Could somebody remind me where we left them in season 4? Because the Beth clone from space came in. And there was kind of somewhat of a reconciliation, but not to this extent that we thought Barry was going to be completely back together. But they seem happy. They seem like they're experimenting with stuff. You know, they're sex positive now. Do we think Barry is back together?
So were they fighting? They were divorced or something earlier.
They got divorced. I think that happened in season 3 towards the end, and they spent all of season 4 with Jerry like moving out of the house. Like that was a plot. They were divorced and living the divorced life. There was an episode where Jerry's dating the alien huntress or something. So season 4 was Barry divorced season, but they did have a little bit of a reconciliation at the end. I thought that where we left season 4, they were still in a little bit of an unstable spot. But it seems like there has been some stuff between the end of season 4 and now where they are completely for each other again.
I think Dr. Wong is a big part of that. Yeah, at the beginning of the episode, they literally say Dr. Wong has never been wrong for us before. So that's why they encourage each other to go through with the three-way. So I think she's a big part of their relationship still being together.
Okay, the only reason I was a little bit confused is because I thought I remember there being some quotes at the end of season 4, so the most recent episode besides this one, where Jerry makes a joke about after the space Beth comes back saying, oh, looks like I got two wives now. So it was kind of implied that he was living at home at the time, I think. So at the end of season 4, they're already back together, but I really don't know. But either way, it seems like they're going strong. They have some chemistry again. And even though this was like a weird episode for them, there was nothing really negative. Like they're still trying to bang Mr. Nimbus together. So
they do bang Mr. Nimbus together. Yeah.
And Mr. Nimbus says one important line at the very end in that extra credit scene. I think it's Beth that says, oh, we can't let Rick know about this. He wouldn't understand. And Mr. Nimbus says, yes, he would. So a lot of people I was seeing talking on the internet are saying maybe that's why Mr. Nimbus knows about Diane. If Rick and Diane were in the three-way contract with Mr. Nimbus at one point.
Oh, my God. They definitely were. They 100% were.
Like how else would he have known?
I didn't think that deep. I thought it was just like Rick's the kind of guy that'll fuck a planet. He'll understand two people trying to get it on with the king of the sea. Like and, Rick
but
knows how to fuck.
Tinfoil hat though, I'm gonna say Kyle was Rick's first kid that he had with Beth in that threesome with Mr. Nimbus and he's dead as fuck.
I did also see the most super tinfoily theory I could find was, does it line up how Beth could possibly be a kid of like Mr. Nimbus or something? Like there's something there.
Yeah, there's something there, man. I think you put it in my head now that you mentioned that.
We're definitely going to get some more plot next time we see Mr. Nimbus, whether it's the end of the season or in a future season. He seems like he's could be a good vehicle to give us some Diane info.
Definitely. Want to start talking about all that Jessica stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't have a lot of the quotes, but she goes in and just describes her experience in that frozen crystalline stasis, saying how she essentially became a time god and was in this thing where time means nothing. She kind of took a step back of it and had to just exist for a couple thousand years.
She says, "I've glimpsed into the mind of eternity, perhaps the mind of God, and found nothing but silence." And then at the end, when she's walking away, she's like, "Fuck you, I'm a time god." I have no idea where they're going to take her character, but I hope they don't regress whatever permanent changes they just did to her. I don't want her to go back to being just the basic bitch that rejects Morty at every turn. I think it could be way deeper and more fun if she is weird like this.
I'm so curious to see. Every time we get, like, even at the beginning of season four, like, I was just so excited to see where the season would take us, and I'm just the same way now. My love for the show has not faded at all over the years, and this only just got me so excited to watch week to week and see what adventures are going to be going on. Welcome back, Rick and Morty, baby.
I think it was Dan Harmon, one of the two writers of the show, said that going forward, we should expect smaller gaps in between seasons, which is the most important thing I've ever heard in my entire life. That's amazing. So hopefully we're never waiting more than 12 months to get another season. And if they just keep cranking out the content because they know they can keep continuing plot lines through the seasons that I keep bringing up, I think, dude, there's so much potential here for just us to look back on the first four seasons of Rick and Morty and say that was like the prequel before it started peaking. That would be amazing to say.
I've been here from the beginning, episode one, when it aired, and I'm going to be here till it fucking stops airing. So that's the fact.
If we can look back and say the first four seasons were the prequel before the peak, then this is going to be one hell of a show, because that could have been any other show's peak.
One more thing I do want to bring up before we can close this out. I do want to say the most common gripe I saw on the internet, whether it was across Reddit or just random internet blogs or Twitter, whatever it was, most people were a little annoyed with how nerfed Rick was. And he's been like this a little bit for, I would say, the last season too, where he doesn't always seem like he's in control. He always finds himself a lot more in susceptible positions. When he was going to die to Zeus in the planet fucking episode, or he got his ass kicked by Mr. Nimbus, or he got his ass kicked by the Narnia people. Just
Phoenix person too.
That's a gripe that a lot of people are having, that he was way more all powerful and saying stuff like, "I'm a fucking god," in the first like three seasons, and it's starting to taper off a little bit. And I'm concerned what your take is, especially in this episode, because Rick was never in control, even from the cold opening.
My take is that it's just that he's around his family more. I mean, we literally get introduced in season one to him just like reappearing one day. He was never in Beth's life, and he just only recently decided to come into their lives. And now that he has to juggle not only his solo adventuring lifestyle, but also what his family gets up to, and that he brings Morty along, and like that influences him too. And Morty's a wild card in himself, where he'll be a greedy fucking bastard and do things that fuck up Rick's plans, but benefit Morty, you know?
That's
so
a great point.
I think it's just a lot of just, he has to carry a lot of dead weight nowadays.
Be a better person, he becomes less
powerful.
Less powerful. I kind of like that, because he totally cares about Summer way more than he did in the future.
Like I said, I think what carries that whole thing is that he didn't come back into their lifestyle and their lives until recently, you know?
I would say it's kind of a necessity from a showrunner standpoint to nerf him a little bit so that the other characters are required to step up. Also, they are presenting him with challenges that logically he could not overcome. This one, he faces a civilization that has exponentially grown, shoots the laser beam at it, expects it to just fuck up the bird. The bird absorbs it, shoots it right back at him. He was dumbfounded. He was just like, oh shit, that's pretty cool. It makes sense that he's not in control of some of the situations, but yeah, you did bring that up. I didn't see those gripes online, but I am now starting to think about it. Yeah. And you're absolutely right. He was an all-powerful god.
But
and now he's not.
Right there actually makes me feel a little bit better, even about the getting his ass beat by Nimbus at the end, because he still at that point had no technology on him. So I'll give him that, where maybe if he fought Nimbus before going into Narnia, he would have kicked his ass because he would have had all of his shit with him.
If you just give Rick to prep like just a day, literally 24 hours of prep to fight anybody, I think I think he kicks Zeus' ass. I think he kicks fucking Phoenix person's ass. These moments just spur on him and he doesn't expect it. Like, he can't be ready for everything.
I would say that nobody should have gripes with Mr. Nimbus being able to kick his ass, especially if he's stripped of all his armor and gadgets and stuff. Because Rick, this entire episode, has acknowledged Nimbus as his nemesis. Mm-hmm. He respects the name Mr. Nimbus. He knows that he is a threat, at least to some level. Just any Joe Schmo could not be Rick Sanchez's nemesis. It just couldn't happen. So Mr. Nimbus is a powerful person who should be able to handle himself against Rick. Does that make sense?
No,
the the title alone is there. He is literally, Rick admits, he is my nemesis. Zeus wasn't his fucking nemesis. Like, God wasn't his nemesis. It's fucking Mr. fucking Nimbus.
It opens the door for Atlantis to be a lot more important in a future episode, which I really like. And the more we've talked about it through this podcast, the more hype I get about the idea of Atlantis being an actual entity on Earth itself that can pose a threat. But I like all that stuff.
Dude, Mermaid Puss is starting the world war of fucking Atlantis. So I'd love to see what's going on down there.
World wars have been started for much less
than Mermaid Puss.
Ask Archduke Franz Ferdinand. Yeah.
Yeah. So, highlight for me, definitely, I thought Summer's background character was amazing. And then the Narnia entire storyline of their civilization, not even how Morty interacted with them, just what happened to them and them evolving in that way was so well done. I would give this episode, like, you know, a 7 or 8 out of 10. I thought it was great.
I would say 7. I was going to say 7, right around there.
Yeah, 7, 8. I really liked Mr. Nimbus, and I did really like the Narnia storyline. So I'll give it an 8. A really strong start to the season, though.
I feel like the openers are always usually pretty consistently good.
Guys, keep an eye out for our continued coverage of Rick and Morty. We're going to be covering each episode week by week as they come out. As always, if you like what you heard, give Bingetown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram. Visit us on BingetownTV.com and subscribe to our show on Spotify, the Apple Podcast app, or wherever else you may find your podcast. Once again, we are Bingetown TV, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.